From BDWPS.com and BDWPS Podcasts, this is Year of the Joni, a podcast series that tells the story of Joni Mitchell over the course of a year. My name is Andy, and I'll be your host throughout this audio journey. If you like what you hear on this month's episode, I'd love if you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Just search Year of the Joni. I'd also appreciate any positive reviews and feedback that you can leave. On this month's episode, we'll be taking a look at the experiences and struggles that would shape one of Joni Mitchell's most important albums. The intimate nature of Joni Mitchell's 1971 release, Blue, would open up her personal life for all to see. Watching old movies, Joni found a kindred spirit in Marlon Brando's performance in On the Waterfront.
It wasn't him, Charlie, it was you. You remember that night in the garden, you came down my dressing room and said, "Kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the price on Wilson." You remember that? This ain't your night. My night, I could have taken Wilson apart. So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors in a ballpark, and what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. You was my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me just a little bit so I wouldn't have to take them dives for the short-end money.
Well, I had some bets down for you. You saw some money.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody. Instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it.
Joni later said of Brando's performance, quote, "He's touted by nearly every actor who came after him for his performance in On the Waterfront. They all agreed that it changed the standard. It had nothing to do with the method. It had everything to do with Marlon's personal genius. The method is that you deliver your lines like you've never heard them before, so that every time you perform the song, it's got to come like you never heard it before." Marlon's take was that he couldn't watch himself. He was totally embarrassed by his performance. And when they started laying out this confessional label on me, I felt really embarrassed. When Blue came out, it was shocking to the men around me and upsetting. The vulnerability freaked them out.
Blue is considered a classic. How so?
Now.
But at the time?
No.
People thought.
Horrified.
Well, how were they horrified? Why were they horrified?
Well, the men, because it was a man's world. Kris Kristofferson went, "Joni, you know, keep something of yourself." Johnny Cash said, the world is on your shoulders. They all recoiled because the game was, I'm bad. Even though it was before that. The game is to make yourself larger than life. Mm. Don't reveal anything human. And my thing is, why? You know, movies do it. You know, okay, it hasn't been done in the song. Why do we have to, you know, in film? It's been done in film. So, you know, but the trouble is, I'm the playwright. I'm the actress, you know, and I want them to look at the play and see past it, but all of it. It's such an intimate art form, and I'm doing so much of it that all the attention is going to me, which is insane. From my point of view, it's like you're not going to get anything out of it if you look at me. You know, you got to see yourself in it. Otherwise, it has no value.
Joni has described the album Blue as, quote, "private letters that were published," and the music media would jump on the salacious material found within. Around this time, Rolling Stone magazine were known for their illustrated charts that showed the connections between popular artists and their influences. Joni would be featured in one of these charts, but hers would be a little bit different. Instead of musical connections, the names that sprouted off from her in Broken Hearts were those of David Crosby, Graham Nash, Leonard Cohen, and James Taylor. The chart would be titled, quote, "Old Lady of the Year."
Look at the rep I got. That was a list of people whose path I crossed. It wasn't even, you know, in the Summer of Love, they made me into this love bandit, right? In the Summer of Love, so much for free love. Nobody knows more than me what a ruse that was.
In the years that followed, Rolling Stone's nickname for Joni would be El Lay, as in the Spanish article El and the pseudonym for sex, Lay. At a time when men like Mick Jagger, Jim Morrison, and Robert Plant were celebrated for their sexual exploits, Joni was being shamed for having serious relationship with men that just so happened to be famous musicians.
Warren Beatty said fame is a series of misunderstandings surrounding a name, because people tend to project, you know, their trip onto you, especially if they don't have self-knowledge, and most of them don't, you know. So you really, to be famous, you really have to know who you are, because you're getting this barrage of, you know, mislabeling and, you know.
Rumors, depression, fame, all of it built to a head. In need of escape, Joni would sell everything she owned, including her house, and escape the madness by moving to a little stone house on the west coast of British Columbia, Canada, far away from civilization.
Like when that person becomes, as you did by the early 70s, this massive star. Having said all you did about fame,
I retreated into the BC wilderness.
Yeah.
You know, I hated it. Hated it. The fishbowl is a world reversed. Pike, pickerel, bass.
Meaning all of it? To the point where you look back at those times and go, that sucks.
That attention to celebrity is mental illness. You know, the mental illness that creates that attention is tragic to me.
In an attempt to get back to the garden, she would buy what her friend Tony Simon described as, quote, the most beautiful 60 acres you could find in the world. The cottage, which she christened Walden Woods after Henry David Thoreau's journals, would not have electricity and would be heated solely by a fireplace.
I wish I had a river I could skate away on.
I moved up into the Canadian backbush to a small sanctuary where I could be alone, lived with kerosene, stayed away from electricity for about a year. I turned to nature. I was going down, and with that came a tremendous sense of knowing nothing. Western psychology might call it a nervous breakdown, but in certain cultures, they call it a shamanic conversion. I read nearly every psychological book that I could lay my hands on and threw them all against the wall, basically.
Isolated from humanity, Joni would turn to the books she filled the house with, and as mentioned in the clip just played, most of them didn't provide her with the answers she was seeking. The works of Nietzsche, however, would hit straight to the core.
But, you know, these things are not, you know, I didn't stay there. It was something, it was a change, a period of change for me that was very painful. And a lot of it had to do with, we've got to get ourselves back to the garden. This urgency that I felt that we as a stupid species were destroying our planet. I was alarmed, you know, at the electricity we were using, for instance, and certain things. Built a house and buried my electrical lines and didn't even use it for a long time. The things, they seemed eccentric at the time, but really they were quite progressive when you look at it now. They were actual revelations. And I'm an individual, which, defined by Nietzsche, is a person who can't follow and doesn't want to lead. You know, so when you have these kind of things, and you do kind of want to lead, but how, you don't really want people sitting at your knee, you know.
Other Nietzsche quotes would become mantras for her, such as, quote, without music, life would be a mistake, and, quote, to live is to suffer, to survive is to find some meaning in the suffering. The latter quote would inspire a song written at Walden Woods entitled Lesson in Survival.
Lesson in survival, spinning out on turns that gets you tough. Guru books, the Bible, only a reminder that you're just not good enough. You need to believe in something once I could in our love. Black road, double yellow line. Friends and kin, campers in the kitchen. That's fine sometimes, but I know my needs, my sweet tumbleweed. I need more quiet times by your river flowing, you and me, deep kisses and the sun going down.
Another reading that would have an impact on Joni was the study piece Beethoven, His Spiritual Development.
This is a song that I wrote for a guy who's long gone. I was going to call it Roll Over Beethoven Revisited, but I just call it Ludwig's Tune. I can't think of a better title than that. It's a song about Beethoven. You know, I was reading a book on his spiritual development, and my heart really went out to him, because here he was with all of this genius, which wasn't really accepted in his own time. People thought he was really radical and crazy, and you couldn't do parallel fifths. It just wasn't music, you know. Plus, he was kind of an immalleable person and kind of coarse by the standards of the courts in those days. And so, though he had an eye for all of the women of the courts, they really didn't have much of an eye for him. So there was another frustration in his life, coupled with the idea that he couldn't even hear some of his final music. Well, you probably know all of that, but it really made an impression on me, so I wrote the words to this first, and I waited a long time to put a melody to it, because it was just kind of intimidating, you know, to write music for old Ludwig.
As well be mute, so you get to keep the pictures that don't seem like much. Cold white keys under your fingers, now you're thinking that's no substitute. It just don't do it like the song of a warm home body, love in your touch. And the women that you wanted, they get their laughs. Long silk stockings on the bedposts of refinement, you're too raw. They think you're too raw. It's the judgment of the moon and stars, your solitary path. Draw yourself a bath. Think what you like to have for supper. Or take a walk, a park, a bridge, a tree, a river. Revoked but not yet cancelled, the gift goes on in silence in a bell jar.
In Beethoven, Joni saw a kindred spirit. In fact, throughout her life, she would see connections between her battle with polio and other successful people who overcame major setbacks.
It took another tragedy. It's like, you know, I had to be kind of made ill to get me to stay at home. My destiny pattern, I've got very bad luck in a way. One planet, you know, puts me in the position, it's called stuck at home. Right? So what's going to make me stay at home when I'm basically kind of, you know, a fun-loving, gregarious type, you know? Well, only if they make me sick. It's kind of like Hawking's wouldn't use his brain. They gave him Lou Gehrig's, and he kills everybody in 3 years except him. They took away all distraction, divinity, whatever, the forces that be, to get him to fill his, make himself useful, use what he's supposed to use.
After spending 8 months disconnected from the outside world, Joni was rejuvenated, refocused, and ready to share a batch of new songs with the world. Fresh from the wilderness, she would make her first public appearance at Carnegie Hall, and it's clear that her time away had done some good based off her giddy demeanor and her playful interactions with the audience. However, when she discussed her upcoming album, For the Roses, it became abundantly clear that she still had issues to sort out.
This is another new song. It's called For the Roses. That comes from the expression to run for the roses. And you know what that's all about? That's when they take this horse and, you know, like, he comes charging into the finish line and they throw a wreath of flowers around his neck and then one day they take him out and shoot him. It's kind of a macabre thing to say, isn't it, I guess? Like applause. Did you get around resounding for your way up here? Seems like many dim years ago since I heard that face to face or seen you face to face. Though tonight I can feel you here. Get these notes on butterflies and lilac sprays from girls who just have to tell me they saw you somewhere. Office sits a poet and he trembles as he sings and he asks some guy to circulate his soul around. On your mark, red ribbon runner, the caressing rev of motors finely tuned like fancy women in 30s evening gowns. Up the charts, off to the airport, your name's in the news, everything's first class and the lights go down and it's just you up there getting them to feel like that. Remember the days you used to sit and make up your tunes for love and pour your simple sorrow to the sound hole in your ear. Now you're seen on giant screens and at parties for the press and for people who have slices of you from the company. Toss around your latest golden egg speculation. Well, who's to know if the next one in the nest will glitter for them so. Guess I seem ungrateful with my teeth sunk in the hand that brings me things I really can't give up just yet. Now I sit up here, the critic, but they introduce some band, but they seem so much confetti looking at them on my TV set. Oh, the power and the glory, just when you're getting a taste for worship, they start bringing out the hammers and the boards and the nails. Sounded like applause. Chilly now, end of summer, no more shiny hot nights. It's just the arbutus rustling and the bumping of the logs and the moon swept down black water like an empty spotlight.
By the time Joni returned from her wilderness retreat, ex-boyfriend James Taylor had already moved on. Not only had he started dating singer-songwriter Carly Simon, but he would be married within the year. As a result, much of Joni's new material would fixate on the breakup, including the quintessential post-breakup song, See You Sometime.
Where are you now? Are you in some hotel room? Does it have a view? you're caught in a crowd or holding some honey who came on to you. Why do you have to be so jive? Okay, hang up the phone, it hurts, but something survives. Though it's undermined, I'd still like to see you sometime. I'm feeling so good, and my friends all tell me that I'm looking fine. I run in the woods, I spring from the boulders like a mama lion. To change my name again, but you know I'm not after a piece of your fortune and your fame, 'cause I tasted mine. I'd just like to see you sometime.
Joni would return to California, get an apartment, and begin work on her new album, For the Roses. Since her deal with Reprise had ended, she signed with Asylum, a new label formed by her agent, David Geffen, and her manager, Elliot Roberts. When Geffen first heard the pensive material she'd written in the wild, he begged her to write a hit song. Joni would take the bait and write a parody of his request.
I kept on telling Joni I wanted her to write a hit. And she was always kind of making fun of me, you know, about the idea that she should have a hit. But I wanted her to sell a lot of records.
You're driving into town with a dark cloud above you, dialing the number who's bound to love you. Oh, honey, you turn me on. I'm a radio, I'm a country station, I'm a little bit corny, I'm a wildflower waiting for you. Broadcasting tower waving for you, and I'm sending you this signal here. I hope you can pick it up loud and clear. I know you don't like weak women, you get bored so quick, and you don't like strong women 'cause they're hip to your tricks. It's been dirty for dirty down the line, but you know I come when you whistle and you're.
I wrote a song called You Turn Me On, I'm a Radio, out of blatant commercial. I just thought, you know, I thought that would have a certain amount of disc jockey appeal, since it was full of things like the recording tower and, you know, call me at the station and everything. And it was just like sort of my own peculiar warped sense of humor.
You Turn Me On, I'm a Radio would accomplish Geffen's request, reaching number 25 on the charts, Joni's first top 40 hit released under her own name. For the album cover, Joni would take part in a photo shoot at her BC wilderness abode, even posing naked for several of the shots featured in the liner notes. The album would reach number 11 on the Billboard charts, four spots higher than Blue, although today it's not as well known or as highly regarded as the latter. At the time, critics raved about her continued journey down the path of introspection, with Don Hackman of the New York Times writing, "Each of Mitchell's songs on For the Roses is a gem, glistening with her elegant way with language, her pointed splashes of irony, and her perfect shaping of images." Rolling Stone's Stephen Davis wrote, "Her great charm and wit, her intense vocals, and the sheer power and gumption of her presence combine to bring it all and make it shine."
You know, you got to see yourself in it. Otherwise, it has no value.
It was enough to send you into the BC wilderness, but not enough to prevent you from continuing to make records. You're quite prolific at that time,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. I went deeper, and it even got more unattractive. I went deeper, and it got sadder.
Well, it got bigger first.
For the Roses went deeper. That was written while I was, you know, on the land.
For the Roses often gets overlooked due to being bookended by Joni's two biggest albums. More on Court and Spark next episode. But it's easily one of her finest albums to date. In 2007, the Library of Congress selected it as one of 25 albums to be added to the National Recording Registry. It remains the only Mitchell album to receive this honor. Joni would go on a worldwide tour in support of the album with another up-and-coming artist on Asylum Records by the name of Jackson Browne. Much like Joni, he'd gained notoriety by penning hit songs for other artists like Greg Allman, The Eagles, and Linda Ronstadt. Halfway through the tour, Brown's Doctor My Eyes would crack the top 10 on the Billboard charts, and suddenly Joni's opener was sharing headliner status.
Doctor My Eyes, tell me what is wrong, was I unwise to leave them open for so long?
Joni didn't mind sharing the spotlight. In fact, the two young songwriters would form a relationship over the course of their time on the road. Once again, Joni would fall headfirst into love, captured in her hit song, Help Me.
Help me, I think I'm falling in love again. When I get that crazy feeling, I know I'm in trouble again. I'm in trouble, 'cause you're a rambler and a gambler and a sweet-talking ladies' man. Like you love your freedom.
But when the tour ended and the duo returned to Los Angeles, Joni would experience deja vu, witnessing her young boyfriend's fame getting to his head, much like had happened with James Taylor. The couple's rocky relationship would only be worsened on a night out partying at the Roxy. During an argument in the stairwell, Jackson hit Joni across the face, ending the quarrel. He's denied this incident, although similar allegations have been made by other girlfriends over the course of the past 40 years. Blinded by her love, Joni would stick by Brown's side. The physical abuse may have ended, but the emotional abuse would be heightened by late nights out while Joni stayed at home. As chronicled in the song, Car on a Hill, she suspected his indiscretions, but tried to convince herself he was being faithful.
I've been sitting up waiting for my sugar to show. I've been listening to the sirens and the radio. He said he'd be over 3 hours ago. I've been waiting for his car on the hill.
On one of his nights of debauchery, Brown would hook up with a young model by the name of Phyllis Major. Soon after, he would end his relationship with Joni and would be married to Major within the year. Once again, Joni had been burned by love. All of the growth she'd made in the Canadian wilderness would be shattered. Some stories have suggested that she made a suicide attempt. An anonymous friend has said of the event, quote, she took pills, cut herself up, and threw herself against a wall and got completely bloodied. Glass broke. She vomited up the pills. According to the confidant, David Geffen came to her rescue and got her medical help. In recent years, Joni has denied this story. Whatever the case, Joni had been abandoned by a man she loved once again. And this time, a retreat to the wilderness wasn't going to give her the resolve she needed.
Again and again, the same situation for so many years. Tethered to a ringing telephone in a room full of mirrors. A pretty girl in your bathroom checking out her sex appeal. Asked myself when you said you loved me, do you think this can be real? Search for love that don't seem to cease.
Joni's battle with depression returns on the next Year of the Joni. If you enjoyed today's episode and don't want to wait another month for the next installment, go check out the other two seasons of the Year of the Podcast series. For the David Bowie story, search Year of the Bowie, and the Neil Young story is Year of the Neil. Both podcasts are available on iTunes or Stitcher. You can also check out my monthly podcast entitled BDWPS Podcast, where I play some of my favorite new music coming from the underground. If you are interested in exploring any of the interviews or songs played on this month's episode, a works cited list can be found on bdwps.com. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you in a month.